Hey guys, I'm Heidi Preeb. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. This season on this channel, we have been talking about change. And today, I want to talk about something that can really get in the way of changes that we want to make, particularly when we're looking at changing things like our attachment styles, or our trigger patterns, or any sort of deep internal work, which is being in environments where we are chronically getting triggered, or where we are chronically getting ricocheted out of our window of tolerance, which is essentially the zone of emotional arousal, within which we're able to access our wisest and most resourced self. So this is a term that was coined by Dr. Dan Siegel, who does amazing work in the fields of psychology and interpersonal neurobiology, to describe the optimal range of emotional arousal within which we can function effectively, decision make wisely, and relate to other people from a grounded place. When we are outside of our window of tolerance, what that means is that we are either hyper aroused in our nervous systems, so we're in one of those fight or flight responses where we might be feeling highly anxious, hypervigilant, agitated, angry, and in general just desperate to act in a way that changes our situation. Or we might be in a state of hypo arousal, which might look like a freeze or collapse response where we're numbed out, dissociated, or depressed, and our nervous systems are having trouble kind of rallying up to meet the demands of the situation at hand. So within our window of tolerance, within that optimal zone of arousal, what we're able to do is access the parts of ourselves that have our judgment online, that feel deeply connected to our personal values, that can think and problem solve in flexible and creative ways, that can generally access empathy a lot more easily, and that can think and plan for the long term. So this is where our nervous systems are relatively settled, but still kind of alert and intrigued by what's going on, and not responding to any immediate sort of threat, which means our prefrontal cortex is able to come online and do its job well, and our bodies are able to follow through on the plans that we've made. Now, we're going to get into this in detail shortly, but we also need to be in this state in order to integrate information and learn from our mistakes. And so, for a lot of us, if we are really struggling to change our relational patterns or change the way that we're showing up, despite having every positive intention in the world to begin doing things differently, something we might want to check in on is how often do I feel like I'm inside that window of tolerance on a day-to-day basis? Because if the conditions of my life are frequently pulling me out of it, it's going to be a lot harder to do things like learn from my mistakes, practice different patterns, and really challenge myself in the moments where it matters to do something differently. And if this is the problem that we're up against, that we're rarely in the supportive context that allow for our nervous systems to feel settled enough to make new choices, we might be spending a lot of time shaming ourselves and trying to coerce ourselves into behaving differently, when what we would actually be best served doing is finding a way to increase the amount of stability and safety that we have in our life, so that we're spending more time in touch with the parts of ourselves that know how to implement those changes. But here is my theory on why a lot of us struggle to recognize that we're outside of our window of tolerance in the first place. If we were raised in environments where we were frequently, maybe on a daily or hourly basis, either overactivated and in one of those fight or flight responses, or underactivated and in one of those freeze or shutdown responses, we might not have any idea that the state that our nervous system is usually in is one that is not optimal for feeling safe and settled enough to learn new skills and plan long term. And then as adults, we might end up in environments that are chronically triggering us, but we don't recognize it as triggered because to us, it just feels normal. So for example, let's say you grew up in a home environment where you were very frequently criticized by your parents. And so as a result, you may have learned as a child to dissociate anytime you start getting heavily criticized. And then let's say as an adult, you happen into a work environment where you have a boss or colleagues who are also heavily critical. And you might automatically start dissociating as soon as that happens, which means you might be more likely to last longer at that job than the average person would, but you might not be recognizing that you're in an unusual situation at all, or that the way that you're coping with it through that shutdown response is in fact a trigger. Because again, if you're used to functioning in that slightly dissociated state, it might not strike you as abnormal. Or let's say you grew up in a really chaotic home environment, where the only way to keep the attention focused on yourself was to get involved in other people's drama and arguments. And then as you grow up, you might find yourself chronically in relationships that are very high conflict and high drama. And it might not even occur to you that being locked in a kind of chronic conflict cycle with either your partner or the people that you're close with is in fact an expression of being outside of your window of tolerance. To you, again, that might just feel normal and like how relationships are. And for a lot of us, we also come to identify with how we behave in those instances when we are outside of our window of tolerance, right? So we might just think, I am a very disagreeable person, or I'm a person who is just kind of immune to criticism. Everything just rolls off my back. Not realizing that there is a version of us that actually has quite an integrated experience of our own emotional lives. So who has access to things like what we actually want and care about, like dignity and self-respect and the desire to be treated with kindness, like the capacity to be in a peaceful relationship where there is not chronic conflict and trust that that does not mean we're being abandoned. All of us have those capacities within us when we're functioning inside of that window of tolerance. But if we've spent the majority of our lives outside of it without realizing it, we might again start to think of ourselves as the versions of ourselves that come online when we are triggered, rather than who we are when we are regulated and resourced. And so today, we're going to talk about how to approach healing work not through the lens of shaming and blaming ourselves for the ways that we show up when we're outside of that window of tolerance, though those might absolutely be states that we need to learn to do repair work around, but instead how to expand our capacity for staying inside of that window of tolerance. So how to rearrange the environments that we're putting ourselves in and the way that our relationships function to make sure that we're spending more time inside of that state where we are integrated. So we're going to go into 5 signs that you might be living from a state where you are chronically outside of your window of tolerance, maybe without realizing it. And then after that, we're going to look at how we can start to reverse that process so that we're spending more time inside of that state where we're feeling regulated and resourced. So, sign number 1 that you might be living in a way that is chronically outside of your window of tolerance is that you are stuck in patterns of compulsive self-soothing. So, overeating on a regular basis, using substances on a regular basis, spending a ton of time doom scrolling or numbing out to television every night, feeling chronically dissociated or chronically stuck in a fantasy world. So, truly one of the biggest shifts that I ever experienced in my life was when I started looking at all of these patterns, which at various points in my life have been very regular parts of my life, not as character defects or moral flaws, but as a sign that I am outside of my window of tolerance and I don't know how to self-regulate right now. When we start to look at compulsive self-soothing behaviors as signs that we need healthier forms of structure and self-regulation, then we actually have the opportunity to start tackling the problem at the level that it exists at. Because how we deal with the problem when we're identifying it as I'm a lazy piece of garbage is very different than how we deal with the problem when we're identifying it as something like I am very overwhelmed and I need a lot more support, a lot more loving and compassionate structure for myself, and an environment that I feel like I am competent at navigating. Okay, so in the second half of this video, we're going to go into how to set those things up for ourselves. But for now, I just want to make clear that those patterns of behavior that we are often so quick to shame ourselves for can, in fact, be seen as our nervous system giving us a sign, a little red flag, that we are in over our heads and we need our own help and support, rather than simply shaming ourselves for the behavior. Sign number 2, you might be chronically outside of your window of tolerance, is that you keep behaving in ways that you maybe don't like or can't really recognize yourself in, and yet all of the clarity on earth about why you do that or why you should stop and what you should do instead does not seem to help you actually change the behavior. So we've talked about this in previous videos, but the body and the brain learn differently. Okay, so the brain is really good at recognizing patterns, but the body needs to feel safe in order to take new actions. And it needs to learn through experience. So let's say we're very aware that we don't like the way we show up in conflict. So maybe we either completely shut down in the moments where we feel like we ought to be engaged, or maybe we have that fight energy online and we push really hard in the situations where it might be better for us to back off a little bit. And it can be really easy to recognize those patterns, to point at them, and to say, I should do something different next time. But to actually change them, what needs to happen is we need to design the context in which our body feels safe enough and supported enough to try something different. So a kind of rule of thumb about the window of tolerance is that we learn best and we're most at choice about how we're going to proceed in situations when we're kind of at the edge of our window of tolerance. So when we are stimulated enough that it feels like we're motivated to actually try to find a different solution to a problem, but we are also safe enough and resourced enough to feel like we are at choice when it comes to how we're responding to something. So if we're wanting to practice skills like being more honest or being more assertive in conflicts, if we are waiting until we are already super activated or super deactivated to try to respond differently, we might not be setting ourselves up for success, right? Because in those states, our nervous systems are not really concerned with what our prefrontal cortexes are telling us the best solution is. They are concerned with getting out of what they perceive to be an overwhelming amount of danger. And so what we need to do is figure out how we can slowly start to build our way up to those skills when we are in a regulated state, which might look like figuring out a way to make the conflicts that we're getting into a space where both people are able to stay regulated enough to be acting from their window of tolerance. It is a lot easier to show up as the biggest, most magnanimous versions of ourselves when we have enough safety online to feel like we have regulation to spare. And it is very challenging to show up as the biggest versions of ourselves when we are in survival mode. So noticing that discrepancy between how we want to be responding to the events of our lives and how we routinely do respond to the events of our lives might just be noticing the discrepancy between how we behave when we're outside of our window of tolerance and how we behave when we're inside of it. And the real question, which we're going to get to shortly, becomes how do we deal with more situations in our lives from inside of that window of tolerance? Rather than how do we strong arm ourselves or white knuckle it into behaving differently when we are panicked? Third sign that you might be chronically outside of your window of tolerance is that you struggle to motivate yourself and you might feel chronically numb, dissociated, disconnected from other people, and unsure about what would fix any of it. So this is that hypoarousal part of it, which I think we spend way too little time talking about when we talk about what it means to be regulated versus dysregulated. I think that a lot of us think of dysregulation as just being angry and upset all of the time, but just as often, dysregulation looks like feeling shut down, depressed, overwhelmed, or numb. So there have been periods of my own life where I have really struggled with things like paying attention to simple tasks, finding a sense of meaning in my life, finding and accessing any sort of joy or desire to connect with other people. And what I eventually learned was that it was not that my life was too challenging, which was what it felt like in those moments. It was actually that there was not enough meaningful direction in my life that was activating me enough to get inside of that window of tolerance where my interest and my curiosity and my motivation came online. I actually had a kind of aha moment about this when I was doing my master's degree and I was watching a video of a parent with her child. And we were meant to be taking notes on what she was doing well versus not well. And this was a really young parent who was obviously trying her best, and she was absolutely getting the basics down. Like when her child cried, she was responding to him, and she was feeding him and making sure that he was physically comfortable. But something my professor pointed out when we were kind of going over our class notes was that the parent was not providing very much stimulation for the child. So she wasn't really engaging her baby and playing with him or giving him structured activities. And it really clued in for me, right, humans need to be brought into that zone of emotional arousal, sometimes in the activating direction, right? Or else we can be at risk of kind of falling into those dissociation responses. And so feeling chronically undermotivated, underinspired, or joyless can also be signs that we've gotten used to a pattern of living in a state of hypoarousal, very often without recognizing that as an emotional regulation issue. The fourth sign that we might be living in a way where we are chronically outside of that window of tolerance is that it's starting to take a really disproportionate amount of our energy to adhere to small everyday tasks like cooking, cleaning, taking care of ourselves, keeping up to date with our paperwork, anything that requires those executive functioning skills or a certain degree of willpower can become incredibly challenging when we are living in survival mode, especially if we are living in survival mode without realizing it. Because maybe every day we go to work and dissociate all day long, and then come home to a high conflict environment. Our nervous systems, when they are operating like this, can begin leaking energy like crazy, just trying to keep us regulated enough to meet the demands of everyday life. And so what we might be chalking up to this massive moral failing because we can't seem to do these simple things like managing our social calendars or cooking healthy foods for ourselves or having a normal bedtime routine can in fact be a sign that we are just way outside of our window of tolerance on a regular basis. But the more awareness we develop of what's happening internally for us when we're going through these things, the better we can set ourselves up for success. So there's a period of time where I started to notice that I was so prone to agreeing to things in the moment that I didn't want to do later, that I implemented a practice for myself where no matter how sure I felt in the moment that I wanted to say yes to things, I would tell people I like to go home and think about whether something is a yes or a no for me before committing to it. So I'm going to go home and get back to you on this. Because I knew that when I got back to my apartment that night, I would go back into my window of tolerance because as someone with more avoidant patterning, I was a lot better at listening to my own emotions in an honest way when I was by myself. And so by making a practice out of saying yes or no only when I was already within my window of tolerance, my capacity to follow through on things skyrocketed because I was able to decision make from the part of myself that actually knew what my values were and what felt like a yes and what felt like a no. Which already kind of covers the fifth sign that you might be chronically outside of your window of tolerance, which is that you really struggle to make and follow through on long-term plans. Again, a lot of us chalk this up to a moral failing when what it actually is a nervous system that is so chronically activated that we can't really feel into what it is that we value or are going to want to stay aligned with long-term. Or even in the moments when we can, we're liable to getting sideswiped in the future when we go to enact those plans if our nervous systems are chronically getting hijacked and pulling our attention away from what we decided was going to be right for us when we were more regulated. So with all of this, what I want to make super clear, what I want to double and then triple and then quadruple down on, is that if you see yourself in these five signs, what it is likely not going to be helpful to do is double down on shaming yourself or moralizing about it. And what is likely to start helping you a lot more is to begin asking yourself the question, how can I work on creating enough safety and stability and support for myself in my everyday life for my higher functioning to be able to start coming back online? So this means finding a way to increase the amount of time that we're spending inside of our window of tolerance where we have access to that wise, resourced version of ourselves, who knows who we are and what matters to us and how we want to treat ourselves and other people, and who's capable of growth and change because they have the right amount of safety and support for trying new things. I believe, and some people really disagree with me here, that most of us are pretty good people who have pretty strong empathy skills online when we are resourced. And most of us are also capable of behaving in a way that is pretty reactive and unempathetic towards ourselves and others when we're not resourced. And so trying to put ourselves or other people into these categories of good person, bad person, toxic person, healthy person, a lot of these categories become a lot more accurate when we start looking at it through the lens of, is this person in a resourced state where they're able to access the best version of themselves, or are they not? And that's not to say that we have to lie down and just take bad treatment from people who are not in resource states, right? We still absolutely need to have very clear boundaries that protect us from that reality. But when we're looking at changing our own behavior, often it's going to take us a lot further to figure out how we can get inside of our window of tolerance more often than it is to simply criticize the way that we're behaving when we're outside of it. Now, one of the ways that this gets tricky is that what each of us need in order to stay inside of that window of tolerance is going to be so specific to where we are starting with the unique patterns that our nervous systems have, right? So you could put two people in the exact same environment, and one of them might absolutely thrive there because it might have everything that they need to stay regulated and whole, whereas a different person might become completely dysregulated inside of that exact same environment. So I've talked about this before on this channel, but there's this kind of adage in the attachment community when you're just looking at it in a kind of shallow way, that the way to earn secure attachment is to simply date a secure person. And that might absolutely work for those of us who are just a little bit insecure in whichever direction. But often for people dealing with things like toxic shame, complex PTSD type wounds, severely disorganized attachment systems, secure environments can actually be quite dysregulating for us and can actually ricochet us out of that window of tolerance very quickly because they can just remind us of all the ways in which we feel defective or whatever it is. And I make that point not to be discouraging, but just to say that what's going to bring us and keep us inside of that window of tolerance is specific to each of us. But there are some things we can start looking at or start considering in order to start figuring out what it is that's going to help us get there and stay there more often. The first question that I like to ask myself, particularly when I can tell that I am outside of my window of tolerance and I'm feeling triggered or dissociated or whatever it is asking myself the question, what does it feel in this moment like I need a giant dose of that lasts forever? So to me, that often feels like I need to go barricade myself in a room where I will be alone and where I will not have any sort of pressure on me or anything that I need to respond to for the rest of my life. And unless I can have that, I will not feel okay. Right? And that's a very overdramatic version of it, but that's truly what it can feel like inside of my system. And then what we do is we start walking backwards from that. So does it feel like I need alone time for the rest of my life? Okay. That might be an indication that my life in general right now does not have enough alone time, enough time where the pressure is off me and I can truly relax and sink into my own experience and feel my emotions come online in general. And so what I might want to work on is building much, much more of that alone time into my daily routine. Or let's say you're oriented in the opposite direction. So let's say when you're activated, what it feels like is you desperately need everyone who cares about you to come pay attention to you for as long as you want them there for, and then and only then will you be able to relax and know that you are safe and okay. So what this might indicate is that you might be feeling under-supported in your day-to-day life. And what might help is for you to bake more systems of support into your everyday life. So friends that you touch base with every single day, or a coach or professional that you see regularly enough that your system does not start going into that chronic panic mode that you're going to be forgotten and left alone for the rest of your life. In 12-step communities, they often have this adage that for the first 30 days of any form of recovery program, you might want to go to a meeting every single day. And I think that this is great advice for those who have systems that are kind of chronically activated in maybe the anxious attachment direction. Is if there's a period of time that is going to be chronically stressful for you, can you set up a daily form of support for yourself? Or on the more avoidant side of the equation, can you make sure that daily there is going to be a period of time where you can relax and let down and not have to respond to any sort of external pressure? The more we can bake these things into our daily routines, the more we start to develop pockets where we are functioning inside of our window of tolerance, where we can feel what actually matters to us beyond those feelings of either pressure that we want to have relieved or desperation that we want relief from. Inside of that window of tolerance, we can understand what matters to us in a more long-lasting way, and we can make wiser decisions from that place. The second question I like to ask myself when I notice that I am chronically feeling outside of my window of tolerance is what is one thing that I could do for myself that would earn back my own self-trust in a major way. So I have a video on this that I will link in the description of this video, but essentially I believe that a really major part of what can spiral us into those patterns of compulsively seeking out comfort is when we have gotten disconnected from our sense of dignity. So that healthy sense of dopamine that goes, I matter, I am showing up for myself, and I am caring about my own life. When we do not have that online, what often happens is that we start chronically seeking out other ways of getting those dopamine hits or those moments of comfort that might not be as healthy for us long term. So just finding one small commitment that matters to us, that we can make to ourselves and show up for day after day after day, can often go a really long way to regaining that sense of dignity that is so imperative for staying in our window of tolerance, because we are not fighting against ourselves. So very often when I go through periods where life just feels completely overwhelming, what I'll try to do is set one small goal that just feels intrinsically good. So every day I am going to go on a 30-minute walk because it's good for my health, but it also just feels good for me. Or I'm going to spend this amount of time every day working on this particular project that I know matters to me, and make these habits non-negotiable, which means also making them small enough that we actually can follow through on them. Because the point of them is not necessarily to get the outcome from them. The point is to start building that self-trust muscle back up so that our inner child doesn't feel like it has to rebel by chronically grabbing at whatever dopamine it can find in our environment, because they feel abandoned by our inner adults. Third question, which environmental anchors can I create to let my nervous system know that there will be a time, even if I am triggered for much of the rest of the time, where I routinely feel safe, regulated, and okay? So this might mean looking at a situation where, let's say, we are going home to visit our family, and we know that there are certain triggers that will almost definitely be online when we are there. Can we figure out how to kind of titrate our exposure to those triggers so that we're, let's say, going somewhere else to sleep at night, maybe staying at an Airbnb if we can afford it or whatever it is, so that when we are in the middle of those triggering moments, our bodies also know there will be a time later on where I will not feel triggered and where I will have that secure base in myself to return to. A lot of us get really focused on just behaving differently when we are triggered, when we would actually be better served by simply carving out more time where we are not triggered, right? This is kind of the equivalent of how when we get really hungry, we don't really care if we're eating broccoli or a pizza. If the pizza is available, we're going to take the pizza. The same is true with nervous system regulation. If we are chronically triggered, we stop caring very much about how we're taking care of ourselves. But if most of the time we feel regulated, okay, and on our own team, then we have more willpower online to deal with the moments where we are triggered. Our emotional systems need recovery time. This is not any different from how it's incredibly important to have recovery time when we're doing hard exercise like strength training or running, right? If we are doing those things too much, we're going to injure ourselves. And if we are in environments where we are triggered too often, we're going to have a lot of trouble coping. Versus if we can deal with them in small doses and then return to the version of ourselves that we know feels regulated and capable of caring for us, this can often go a lot further than simply trying to change how we're behaving in the moment a trigger comes online is going to. So that titration process of going back and forth between states of trigger and states of regulation can be one of the most useful skills we can possibly develop. Fourth question that I find it useful to ask myself when I notice that I'm frequently outside of my window of tolerance is, what level of challenge or support would I need in order to effectively build this skill that I want to build? So let's say I want to get better at staying online and associated inside of hard conversations. If the only places that I'm practicing that skill are in the really high pressure moments that feel life or death to me, I'm probably not creating the best learning context for myself. Because again, remember, we learn at the edge of that window of tolerance, where we have a reasonable amount of challenge, but also a reasonable amount of safety and support available. So, for myself, when I was learning skills like figuring out how to be more present with my negative emotions and with my own vulnerability, there was no way in hell that I was going to start inside of my intimate relationships or my family relationships or even my friendships. I needed to start out practicing that skill inside of a therapeutic context where I knew that I was not going to get rejected for showing up in a way that was either unskillful or not yet perfect. And then when my body started logging, okay, this is safe, this is all right for me, I could begin practicing it inside of workshop contexts, where again, there is a specific container that was holding that experience for me that made it okay if I wasn't yet doing it perfectly. And then I started being able to practice those skills inside of friendships and communities that were explicitly oriented around people practicing relational skills. And then eventually they became things that I was able to bake into my everyday relationships. So, my family relationships, my pre-existing friendships, dating contexts. So, the idea here is that our window of tolerance can absolutely expand. Maybe at one point in time, we can't handle any sort of rejection or any sort of ambiguity in our relationships, but over time, we can learn to be present with the parts of ourselves that are uncomfortable in those moments, and we can resource ourselves with new skills that help us tolerate them better. But this is going to work best if we start with a moderate trigger and lots of support in integrating it, and then slowly up the stakes as we go. Well, being discerning about the fact that what we don't want to do is learn the skills that are going to adapt us to really unhealthy environments. Right? So, what we're not trying to teach ourselves are skills like how do I sit here and take verbal abuse from another person without feeling overwhelmed? We need to use our discernment to really be honest with ourselves about what types of environments we are trying to adapt ourselves to and make sure that the skills we're building are ones that are going to help us function better inside of those secure interdependent networks, not those unhealthy, overwhelming ones that maybe we have logged as normal our entire lives without realizing that they've actually been taking a huge toll on us. And then the fifth and final question that we want to ask ourselves if we notice that we are frequently living outside of our window of tolerance is simply, how can I start designing environments for myself where I am not predominantly operating from outside of that window of tolerance, but I'm also not missing out on my life? So finding that optimal zone of arousal that we can live inside of most of the time, where we feel both adequately challenged, but also adequately resourced to rise to the level of those challenges without getting triggered or abandoning ourselves in any major way. And so, what we're gonna have to look at in this case are which types of environments do I feel like naturally bring out the best, most resourced versions of me? Which types of relationships do I naturally relax into and feel comfortable taking risks in? Looking for those contexts where we feel supported, and then building them into our day-to-day life until we are feeling stable and secure in our inner experience more often than not, is in a lot of cases going to do much more for us than endlessly shaming ourselves and trying to get ourselves to behave better is going to. All right, this has been a lot for today, but if there's anything that I hope you can take from this video, it's that sometimes we are shaming ourselves for things that we are actually just not resourced enough to be able to do differently. And sometimes directing our attention and energy towards giving ourselves more resource is going to go a lot further than trying to change those behaviors in a vacuum is going to. Now, as always, any questions, anything coming up for you as you go through this video, please leave in the comment section below. I love you guys. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and each other, and I will see you back here again really soon.